Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 25th and 27th, 2024. While claiming it had information on impending attacks, Israel Saturday launched what it called preemptive strikes against targets in South Lebanon. Hezbollah returned with rocket barrages and drone strikes aimed at enemy radar installations and army barracks in the Golan Heights and against the Amman military intelligence headquarters located outside Tel Aviv. It was, the Islamic Resistance says, the first of a two-phase response to the assassination of senior Hezbollah figure Saeed Fouad Shakur in Beirut last month. Meanwhile, non-Western mediated information about what's going on in the region is becoming more difficult to come by for those in the West, as local journalists are murdered in Gaza, independent reporters arrested and harassed by thuggish police services in Britain, and news platforms blocked and their principals arrested in France. Laith Marouf is founder and executive director of FreePalestine.video. He's a longtime multimedia consultant, producer, and frontline reporter who's been chronicling the escalation to war from his base in Beirut. Free Palestine Video says its purpose is to provide coverage of the region, quote, in the absence of media supporting the resistance forces in the English language due to the ban in the West. Laith Marouf in the first half. And much is being made in the Western press of Ukrainian military success in its latest offensive in the Kursk Oblast. Though Russian media admits towns near the border have been overrun and prisoners taken, President Vladimir Putin is strangely sanguine about the lost territory, waving the incursion off. Newsweek quoted Putin as telling the governors of Kursk, Belgorod, and the Bryansk regions, and Kremlin officials too, in a teleconference last week, losses of territory to Ukrainian forces were, quote, problems that are the responsibility of the security agencies. Putin's apparent disengagement follows his backpedaling last month on previous Russian demands of Ukraine that began the special military operation in 2022. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and the lately released autobiography Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes. His recent article at Dances with Bears is Kursk, Belgorod, Bryansk, Is President Putin Preparing for Istanbul 2? John Helmer and trying to make sense of President Putin's Byzantine Ukraine policy in the second half. But first, Laith Marouf and watching the war for West Asia expand from Lebanon. Welcome back to the program, Laith.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, Laith, before getting to the military exchanges going on now between Lebanon and its belligerent neighbor south, yesterday, Russian-French national and billionaire founder and CEO of Telegram, Pavel Durov, was arrested in France. For our less tech-savvy listeners, Laith, what is Telegram? And more importantly, what's its significance in the struggle?
It's very significant because it is one of the only platforms that actually practice free speech. It is both a communication platform where you can make calls just like WhatsApp or Signal. And it is a social media kind of platform where you can create groups and share news. So much of the resistance groups in West Asia have channels, and this is where, you know, everybody that wants to watch the videos coming out from the front lines and or read about the comments from the resistance groups can find the information. There's no other way we can access this information. The funny thing about the arrest of the CEO of Telegram is that when the war in Ukraine began, the Russian government asked Telegram to, you know, maintain a record of all communications for 6 months in order that if somebody was accused of terrorism, that they can access the information. And the CEO, who is a Russian citizen, refused and left Russia, and it was banned by Russia Telegram. And he was acquired a French citizenship and a UAE citizenship. And lo and behold, because he refused to give that same information to the West and or to block the channels of resistance groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, he has now been nabbed by the French government. And that's a big, I think, signal for anyone that is doing media work or information work about what the empire is doing on the planet now has to watch out. And within, I think, hours of this arrest, we saw the CEO of Rumble, the alternative to YouTube, and Rumble, the CEO is Russian, but also Canadian. And the Canadian government has been trying also to block some of the channels on Rumble, and there's been orders by European states for different channels to be banned, and Rumble is refusing. He, as a CEO, just now fled from Europe. We don't know where he's going. He's probably going to a place where the West doesn't have extradition treaties. And, you know, Free Palestine TV, our channel on YouTube, is heavily censored. We had even music videos being taken down. We don't post any of the reports from the ground on YouTube. We post all of that on Rumble, our field reports and our translation of the operation videos. By the way, anyone that wants to watch operation videos from the front lines in Palestine and Lebanon, they can go to our channel on Rumble, Free Palestine TV, to see the translated videos.
Chris Pavlovsky is the CEO of Rumble, the Canadian outfit. And yeah, he says that France has threatened Rumble. He says that they're currently fighting, they're in the courts in France, fighting the efforts of the French to rein them in. It's interesting too, Laith, that speaking of Pavel Durov of Telegram, the Russian spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, she came out with a rather cheeky, as is her custom, a comment directed towards NGOs in the West who were up in arms when the Russians were trying to restrict Telegram, as you mentioned, during the early days of the Ukraine conflict. And she's saying, well, where are all these Western NGOs and so forth? Are they going to be up in arms now that France is doing what they had accused Russia may do?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Of course, none of them are going to say anything. It was a rhetorical question. It's funny because, you know, last week I had my computer hacked, my laptop, and somebody just, you know, burned the whole processor in it. I went to check for, you know, bugs on my phone. And this organization here in Lebanon does this testing. And during, I'm not going to mention their name, but during the work, they asked me, why do you have Telegram? And I'm like, oh, it's good. And they're like, oh, well, it's not that encrypted. And, you know, so you shouldn't have it. Maybe that's one of the reasons that you got hacked. And I was like thinking to myself, why would they say that? So I went later on and checked their funding. And of course, their funding, some of it was coming from American government. And I was like laughing, and you know, internally. And then I wake up today, and here we have the news of the CEO of Telegram being nabbed. And that shows you that actually Telegram was the safest option for anybody that wants to communicate and do any work that is disruptive of imperialism and colonialism, anybody that's doing media work. And now if the French government get the back door, I think a lot of people are going to be in trouble. Look at how they, you know, tried to arrest, you alluded to it, Richard Midhurst in the UK because of his journalism work. Anybody that's doing any work right now, media work, against the West is liable for arrest and a disappearance in the dungeons.
It's interesting to me, too. I was talking to Dr. Tarek Loubani, the Canadian-Palestinian frontline surgeon who's done so much work. I was shot, people may remember, through both legs during the Great March of Return in 2018. He's back in Gaza, the GLIA.org, GLIA.org. They do amazing things in Gaza and other places around the world, in conflict zones especially. But when I was setting up interviews with him and some of his colleagues in the field, in Gaza especially, he laughed at me and said, "Oh, you don't have WhatsApp? You know, I mean, what, you know, what's wrong with you?" But WhatsApp is a highly compromised platform that Telegram is an alternative to.
Yes, yes. And we saw how Meta, you know, used WhatsApp with coupled with Lavender, the AI that was killing Palestinians. And so definitely WhatsApp is a Zionist platform and is directly connected to the Zionist intelligence, and they're using WhatsApp to kill people. And it's a huge thing that now we're losing Telegram as an alternative, because Signal itself is also CIA. So what is left for us after Telegram? That's a big question. And this is why I think one of the biggest tasks in front of an emerging world is to create alternative platforms. Now, we're not only talking about creating alternative currencies to the dollar or alternative foras other than the United Nations Security Council. We need to create alternative free speech platforms, social media platforms that can allow all our, the voices of humanity to get through, and we can end this hegemony of Western voices.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Laith Maarouf. Laith is the founder and executive director of FreePalestine.video. He's a longtime multimedia consultant, producer, and frontline reporter. Well, Laith, that is apropos, because this is exactly what you're trying to do at Free Palestine Video. As you say, in the absence of media supporting the resistance forces in the English language due to the bans in the West, and that, and those bans seem to be becoming more and more draconian by the day. I haven't heard stories about the things going on in Canada, like what happened to Richard Medhurst, as you described, when he landed at the airport in Britain, being taken away, much as the Gray Zone reporter Kit Clarenberg was several months ago. He was taken on these security edicts that are newly minted and subjected to harassment, had his devices all invaded and recorded and everything else, and threatened with all kinds of things, and basically in a lawless situation, in the sense that the law would not protect him under these new provisions. He couldn't refuse to answer questions. He couldn't have a lawyer, wait for a lawyer to come and join him, and other things. And Medhurst describes what's happened to him. And they even told him, "Hey, now don't talk about it, like a true abuser. Don't tell anybody what happened to you, or else something worse is going to happen to you after the fact."
Yes, and it's just going to get worse. In fact, I, you know, encourage anybody that's doing work like this right now to move out of Western domains. Because, you know, if Richard, for instance, gets arrested officially right now, he's going to have to go through what Assange went through. And that's not a fun time. And there's no point of, giving yourself up to the imperial forces. And I think, the lesson also from the CEO of Telegram, that was a stupid thing for him to believe that somehow he has more freedoms in the West than in Russia. Look at what's happening in France right now. It's been almost 2 months since the elections happened, and Macron is refusing to allow the winning party to form a government. He's governing as a dictator. France, the quote-unquote homeland of democracy in the West, has now abandoned democracy because an anti-Zionist left has won the election. And all of these things that we're seeing are omens to what is going to come in the next few weeks and months as this war continues, and it will continue, the war in the region here.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've been following what's going on over there in France along this vein. And Clarenberg has been writing and posting about this as well. And Kit Clarenberg, he's British, but he lives in Serbia. He's followed your advice ahead of schedule. Edward Snowden, for example, you know, everyone knows in Russia, but it seems that the West is following, and they're right now. The CIA chief was in Serbia just this past week. They've been up to their tricks, it seems, there. And you're in Lebanon, and the Western forces are moving towards you as well. Now, Laith, what's going on? I said off the top there was exchanges of fire, but more than what's been going on for these last 10 months and more, this is a definite escalation. What's happening?
Yes, so today at dawn, Hezbollah began a retaliation to the assassination of Brigadier General Shukr that was assassinated almost a month ago here in Beirut by the Zionists. And it started with a wave of 320 missiles and a wave of drones that targeted 11 main bases in the north of Palestine and in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. And all of that was not only, you know, hitting their targets, but they were also distracting all the air defenses for advanced drones to actually hit the headquarters of the Amman, the Israeli military intelligence, just outside Tel Aviv, so it's like 110 kilometers away from the border of Palestine, and the main drone control base and air defense base in North Palestine. Those were the actual primary targets for Hezbollah's retaliation. The Israelis, according to them, flew 100 jets over South Lebanon and did 40 raids. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, spoke at 6 p.m. and gave us that information that I just told you about what is the primary targets. And he said the Israeli attacks did not hit any of the drone bunkers and the missile launchers where the attacks by Hezbollah were launched from. And he said that he considers this resolve this matter, that this retaliation was it, pending what the Israelis admit as has happened. Because up until now, the Israelis are claiming nothing happened, nothing was hit. If this is what the Israelis continue to claim, then Hezbollah will retaliate further. And also pending if the Israelis do something crazy and attack back Lebanon. So we're right now waiting to basically to see what the Israelis are going to say and do in the next few hours, days.
I understood that this was phase one of the so-called Operation Arba'in. Please correct my pronunciation in all cases, Laith. But this was then the second phase, or that there wasn't two phases to begin with? Or
so what? There was two phases during this operation. The first phase was the 320, 340 missiles and a wave of drones that distracted all the air defenses and hit the 11 bases in the north. And the second wave was the specialized advanced drones that hit the objective targets in and around Tel Aviv. So this is according to, but it is still a preliminary response in the sense of that it is open depending on what is evaluated as has been hit and how the Israelis respond to it.
So Hezbollah is giving Israel a chance to stem the escalation right now if they don't respond, as pardon me, as we know that they do.
Yes, definitely. This is what Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah was trying to say today. He was saying, you know, people were worried that there's still more, that there's a phase two or what have you, or more phases. And he said, no, everybody can relax. You can come out of your bunkers. That's how he was talking to the Zionists. And pending, you know, your leadership admitting to what actually was hit. So because Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah was clear that the two targets that were hit, the Amman and the base, the air defense base in the north, and the main command and control for the air force, were hit because they were used in the assassination of Shukr. And clearly, the targets were not only physical targets, that there was actually also individuals that were targeted. So we're probably talking about some general within the Amman and or the air defense systems, air operation systems in the Israeli military that had to be also liquidated in retaliation. So we'll wait to see what the Israelis say. But if the Israelis say there's nothing, no destruction, and nobody was killed, then Hezbollah has no choice but to hit again to land the punch that is not going to be easy to hide.
Well, when you say that Nasrallah said that none of our launch sites or et cetera were hit by the Israelis, is there any indication that the Israelis were trying to hit them? Or is their response just more random, just untargeted or targeted against civilians?
Yes, so he referred to it as a intelligence failure and an operational failure because, number one, he said the Israelis claimed that they hit strategic missile compounds, and that means like ballistic missiles or advanced guided missiles, and he said they didn't hit any of those. Not today, not any day since the beginning of this war have they been able to do so. And he said that Commander Shukr, when the beginning of this war started and the genocide in Gaza, he actually ordered the movement of all of these missiles from their bases in the south of Lebanon. So whatever they hit, they're hitting, they have old intelligence. They don't have the true location of the advanced missiles that Hezbollah has. And later on in the day today, the Israelis managed to hit two Katyusha launchers that were used in the initial attack. But Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said those costs, you know, between 5 to 10,000, depending how much they deck them up, according to his own language. And he says they are usually abandoned after the firing. But they were not able to predict where the launching was coming from, neither for the drones or the missiles. And they were not able to hit any of the launching bays of drones during the attack. Therefore, it was a complete intelligence and military failure for the Zionists.
Well, I'm looking at a clip from the New York Times quoting the Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari saying, quote, "We warn the civilians located in the areas where Hezbollah is operating to move out of harm's way immediately for their own safety." There is the idea that Israel's strategy is one of indiscriminate bombing, targeting not these bases anyway, but civilians in a hope one presumes to have the government of Lebanon and the people of Lebanon turn against Hezbollah. What do you think of that analysis?
If there was anybody that was going to turn against Hezbollah, it would have happened October 8th when Hezbollah launched its solidarity front with the Palestinians. Today, the vast majority of Lebanese, it doesn't matter what their political or religious background, they are on the side of the resistance. They are proud of it. They've seen the achievements, the amazing achievements of Hezbollah, and everybody's behind them. I think it will be impossible to find anyone that will turn around against the resistance, and especially in the south of Lebanon, where people have given all their livelihood, their homes, and their sons to the resistance and for the liberation of Palestine. If the stupid rabid dogs that lead the Zionist colony actually attack civilians now in South Lebanon, Hezbollah, as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said in his speech today, will retaliate in full equal measure, and there will be mass deaths of Zionist colonists, not the armed military that has been targeted up until now, and Hezbollah has been very careful not to target the colonists up until now, but they will definitely retaliate in kind.
Well, besides a deterrence on Hezbollah's part, what's their ability to intercept aircraft or incoming missiles? There was talk that Russia was to begin supplying more advanced anti-aircraft missiles and missile systems. How are they at stopping these attacks before they hit the ground?
Well, we saw Hezbollah shoot down at least six or seven of the most advanced drones that the Israelis have, the Hermes 900 and the Hermes 450. We saw Hezbollah also use air defenses to chase away F-15s and F-16s at least four times in the last 2 months. And they haven't shown us their full capabilities. So I'm sure they're hiding these capabilities for the eventuality of a full-out war. You don't want to show those, because once the radar is visible or a anti-air defense launcher is visible, it becomes an easy target itself. So you want to only use such equipment in a full serious situations. And we will have a lot of surprises, I believe. But the most important thing that Hezbollah can do is after the primary, let's say, air attack comes from the Zionists, is that Hezbollah will destroy all the air strips that the Zionist colony has. And in that situation, the Israeli Air Force is irrelevant. It will not be able to land back in the colony, and it will have to go to one of the neighboring countries. And already Hezbollah warned Cyprus, and with that hinted basically to Jordan that it will be hit also if its airfields are used to attack Lebanon.
Well, and in Gaza, the faux peace talks are reported by Reuters is showing no sign of progress. Interestingly, Al Jazeera is quoting Reuters. Why Al Jazeera can't get access to people that Reuters can is a mystery to me in this regard. Laith, finally, how do people find you and your site and your work?
Yeah, you can go to freepalestine.video. Where you can donate, be a monthly donor or what have you. We appreciate it. And there you can find all our socials. We're on Twitter at TV Free Palestine. We're on Telegram, Instagram, Rumble, YouTube. We've just launched a new show called Prisoners of War, Palestinian POWs Speak. We have set up a team in the West Bank now that they're going to be doing weekly interviews with prisoners of war that were just released, and they're giving us their stories and their backgrounds and what happened to them. And we're translating all the operation videos from all the resistance groups in West Asia. We're doing field reports here from the south of Lebanon and interviews with personalities. Please, please, please donate at freepalestine.video.
freepalestine.video. There's a ton more that we could talk about, but sadly, Laith, as ever, time is not on our side. I want everyone else to stick around because I'll be back after the break to talk to a couple of filmmakers that are making a series on this civil war in Sri Lanka, what caused it and where it stands today after all these years. Thanks a lot again, Laith, for coming on, eh?
Thank you for having me.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone. And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, much is being made in the Western press of Ukrainian military success in its latest offense in the Kursk Oblast, though Russian media admits towns near the border have been overrun and prisoners taken. President Vladimir Putin is strangely thankful about the lost territory, waving the incursion off. Newsweek quoted Putin as telling the governors of Kursk, Belgorod, and the Bryansk regions and Kremlin officials, too, in a teleconference last week, losses of territory to Ukrainian forces were, quote, problems that are the responsibility of the security agencies. Putin's apparent disengagement follows his backpedaling last month on previous Russian demands of Ukraine that began the special military operation in 2022.